I'd like to call a meeting to order the Early Childhood Learning Finance, or Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. If you could please take your seat. And we do have a quorum, so we're going to need someone to look at the minutes. Representative Mack, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have not. I don't have my folder quite yet. I'm sorry.
Okay. Would you be willing to move them?
I sure would.
Okay.
I need to move the minutes.
Okay. So move. Representative Mack moves approval of the minutes for January 20th. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes for January 20th are approved. We have a big hearing today, members, and we have lots of folks in the audience, and we're going to have to move it along. First of all, we're going to ask the Mayor of St. Paul to come up. We've been working on the MELF scholarships, the DHS allowances, and Parents Aware. So, members, as we go through this, you'll have the opportunity to ask some questions and learn more about how these programs are doing. With that, we'll move ahead. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chairwoman and Representatives. It's an honor and pleasure to be back up at the legislature for another session to talk about some great things that are happening in the city of St. Paul. I'm pleased to talk today about the scholarship and the allowance programs and what they have meant for the city of St. Paul, more particularly for the children and the families in the city. I'm also pleased to recognize we have some folks participating in the programs with New Horizons, the St. Paul Public Schools, and other programs that have benefited and have been benefiting children in the community. As you know, and it's no secret that cities have a key role in the development of young people. Our city's future economic stability and quality of life depend on our ability to connect young people to meaningful learning experiences. As was stated in the Mind the Gap report from the Itasca Project and the Brookings Institute, we must commit ourselves to closing the gap around income, education, and wealth in order to preserve our region's economic vitality. It's not just the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do. As Ed Rolnick has frequently said, the estimated rates of return on preschool investments are 12% or higher each year over the student's lifetime. Families experience less transition, children experience greater connections to school and community as young adults. Over their lifetime, as they are more likely to live in the neighborhoods that they grew up in and hopefully become productive members of our community as well as taxpayers and homeowners and all of those things. The scholarship and pre-K allowances are fine examples of the types of investments that are central to our ability to connect families to financial resources and children to quality learning opportunities. The city began our partnership with the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation in 2006 to take the lead in coordinating and developing the scholarship project in St. Paul. We officially launched the project in January of this past year. Since then, 516 children in Frogtown and the North End neighborhoods have participated and are currently participating in the program. Thanks to all of you and your commitment to families and children, the city became a grantee for the pre-K allowance project because we were already involved with the scholarship project and had the administrative infrastructure to implement it. Because of your leadership with the allowances project, 646 children will begin kindergarten in the next couple of years, having had more quality learning opportunities under their belt. In just a little over a year, a combined 1,100 kids have been the beneficiaries of innovation and investment and will experience life-changing opportunities. Parents now have the information that they need and the resources necessary to choose high-quality learning settings that meet the needs of their families. We know that these investments must be sustained once they enter school, but what we have been able to do here in such a short time has already changed St. Paul, and we must continue to do more. During this pilot period, we have worked closely with the Department of Human Services, the St. Paul School District, Head Start, and many other community organizations to gather feedback and carry ideas forward so these projects are successful. History has shown that during economic times like this, it's important to continue investing in education and learning. I had the great fortune of being in Washington, D.C. On Tuesday, and I heard President Obama in his inauguration speech say, "The state of the economy calls for action, bold and swift, and we will act not only to create new jobs, but to lay a new foundation for growth. We will transform our schools and colleges and universities to meet the demands of a new age. All this we can do, all this we will do." We've been happy in the city of St. Paul to partner with the state of Minnesota and be a part of what President Obama identified as the need in his address on Tuesday. While the work ahead will not be an easy task, I'm optimistic that we'll lay the foundation for our children's future by continuing to invest in programs such as this. On behalf of the children and families in the city of St. Paul, thank you for your commitment to all of them. It's making a difference. We need to keep that progress moving forward.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being here personally. I think it helps us to understand how important it is to the city of St. Paul. Members, are there questions for the mayor? Okay. Well, not right now. We have a pretty full agenda, so I don't know. I'm sure you probably aren't going to be...
And just for the record, Madam Chairwoman, I'll introduce Lisa Caraville, who will be back, I think, later to answer any questions if for the committee and talk a little bit more about the specifics of the program. But thank you for your time, and it is making a huge difference.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Next, we'll have Dwayne Benson come up, and why don't we have Deb Swetson-Klatt come on up, too. So we'll be kind of moving towards that.
Could you bring the handout
for the Okay. I see there's lots of discussions going on at the table. I hope everything okay?
It's a little bit like the Christmas play, Madam Chair, yep. And I'm usually the shepherd, but today I have a speaking part, and it's
a little bit harder. Well, welcome to the committee, Mr. Benson.
Thank you. Representative Pollack and members of the committee, we appreciate the legislature's leadership in this early childhood issue in the past, and we're pleased to be a partner in that and coordinate efforts that support our projects and our evaluations. We want to find those cost-effective strategies as much as you do. Let me give you a little background. In the Early Learning Foundation was really founded in the last month or two of the year 2005. It's an organization of CEOs, tend to be large companies, some foundation involvement, some community leaders. They're all interested in the same thing, to make sure that children are ready to learn when they go to kindergarten. Our mission is a fairly simple one. We want to find the most cost-effective strategies to prepare children to succeed in school. And the important part about this is that they're at-risk children. They're at risk because they're poor, they don't speak English as their first language, or they face other challenges. So that's really our focus. Our goals are very few, but we think very important. The first one is to identify effective models. Empower families with information. If there's one thing I think that we really do focus in on, and we are really betting the farm on, is empowering families with information. We want to strengthen early childhood providers and monitor early learning program quality, find those cost-effective approaches, identify and fill system gaps, and improve evaluation. The last day of 2011, we sunset. We have a time-limited approach, and then we are out of business, so to speak. Let me speak just a little bit about our portfolio of what we do. I will come back to this first one, which is parent aware. It's a quality rating system. But we also, as the mayor talked about, the early childhood scholarship program. We do innovative grants. We have about 10 of those. Examples of that is how do you intervene? How do you handle autism, immigration, data to improve Head Start? We have one that tests kind of dosage and duration. How much does it take over what period of time? So we have those innovations. The community-based projects are the ones you probably or may have heard about, and we have North Minneapolis. There are people from that one. The mayor talked about St. Paul. We also have people here from Wayzata, and then Blue Earth and Nicollet County, which is Mankato and North Mankato. We also have some activities more limited in other jurisdictions like Rochester. They're all community-based. They all include the parent-aware quality rating system. And I should stop here and say that the parent aware is not only just for kids at risk and their parents, it's everyone can access that. And that has become important. We also are doing various college types of scholarships, including the allowances. We do some of the case management in these projects. And then we have partnerships involving public and private organizations to deliver to the families. All of our projects have a very strong evaluation component so that this is of value to you and to foundations when we're ultimately done. Let me talk a little bit more about Parent Aware. Internally, we talk about it like a J.D. Powers. If you buy a pickup or whatever, you can actually get a rating that evaluates the quality of that product. It's similar in as much as what we're doing with the 4-star rating to include centers, family, licensed family child care, Head Start, and school-based programs. And the goal here is to support parents with information of the quality of early child care. And then we want market forces to help direct that support. Art Rolnick is on our board. The mayor cited Art Rolnick. He's become somewhat of the godfather of a lot of this movement. And when you talk about St. Paul, in large part, that's what that's measuring. We also want to measure 4 research-based dimensions: the family partnership, the teaching materials and strategies, the tracking learning, and teacher training and education. And as we've said many times, those pilot areas for Parent Aware are in St. Paul, Wayzata, Lewis and Nicollet County, and North Minneapolis. But the newest twist to this is in April of this year, we will be going citywide in the city of Minneapolis with Parent Aware. And that's largely being supported by Alina, one of our partners in the greater Twin Cities United Way. The pilot costs for the for this portion of it, the MELP, is about $3.5 million. $220,000 of that is for accreditation support. The Department of Human Services has been a wonderful partner through this, about $1.3 million in kind quality improvement and support, and all of this is for Parent Aware. We launched it in July of 2007, and it will end in June of 2010. And in December 10, we'll have the final evaluation report. Our observations or recommendations on year one report, the pre-K allowances do enhance Parent Aware. There's some cultural relevancy that we're finding. The rating process and indicators and information for parents, terribly important that with the diverse populations that we deal with, that they're sensitive to that, and particularly the cultural specific providers. I suppose I could go on and on about what we're learning as it pertains to each one of those specific groups, but it's important that it's for them, not for providers, not for us, but it's to make them empowered by information, because we're increasing marketing to parents. I think some of the things that we're also learning is more, we'll probably need more clarification of the roles of the Department of Education and the Department of Human Services. As you prepare for statewide implementation, and I know I've talked to the chair and some of you that have proposed legislation that we hope to be helpful on. It's important that you leverage existing resources and relationships, and we hope we're in that group. And we think that a quality rating system is the real catalyst for change. To some extent, we can't quantify it, but we're seeing it already just by who is calling our office, both providers and parents, wanting to know more about it, what does it do, and providers saying, how do I do it? Because parents are asking us about it. We think that you have the opportunity then to link public funding to quality. We're also doing this, I must tell you, for foundations who have been asked, how do we get quality? So there will be not only use for you, but them as well. And then these quality rating systems can impact the value of investment. Currently, we have 236 programs with the ratings. That's about a 12% participation rate, which we are pleased with. 55 programs fully rated, 133 accredited programs, and 48 provisional ratings. As I talked earlier about the St. Paul Scholarship, and I said that we are testing the Rolnick, and we shouldn't forget Rob Grunewald, who also was from the Federal Reserve, that is very involved in this. And it's low-income parents, and it's not only information, but it's also mentoring, is that we try to get involved as early as possible, sometimes before the child is born. And then we help them with scholarships, and we want them to access high quality, which is the parent aware 3 or 4 star rating for their 3 and 4 year old children. The mayor talked about the goal of 1,100 children in the North End and Frogtown neighborhoods. Our investment, that the money that we'll raise for that, is $18 million. Our total budget is over $30 million. Stanford Research Institute, SRI, is the evaluator that's helped us design and will evaluate in conjunction with SEED from the University of Minnesota. Let me close by saying and summarize that MELC is in the process of raising and investing $30 million to find these cost-effective ways. We will do this and have multiple pilots that will be of value to you, because the final solution is how do you prepare kids at risk in the most cost-effective ways, and we will have this ready for you for the 2012 session. So that concludes my presentation, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Representative Greiland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Benson, you mentioned that we need more clarification of roles between the Department of Education and the Department of Human Services, and it seems like the last meeting I was at, we were also hassling with that lack of clarification or need for it. And I noticed that we have the Department of Human Services on the agenda, Madam Chair, and not the Department of Education. So I thought, as long as Mr. Benson made that statement, I would ask him, how is that coming? Are we making progress?
Yes, I think we are making progress. I think we have to acknowledge that it's a big challenge, because this probably would have been easier if we would have CFL, quite candidly. But we don't. And so, as you all of you know, we break it off at age 3, so to speak. DHS tends to do it earlier on, and then it becomes more a function of MDE. Internally, we try not to use the term child care, which I think is tied probably with one of the organizations closer than the other. We try to always talk about early education, because it does occur even before a child is born. But I think we're making progress, and I think we're going to get there, and I'm very encouraged by all of the players, not only the state types of players, providers. We're going to get there, and there's going to be some struggles. If there wouldn't be, we would have already been there.
Representative Greiland, and that's part of last year when Representative Peterson introduced the Office of Early Childhood, which would go back to that sort of old CFL model of having them work together under one umbrella, maybe with one commissioner, that could help them make decisions together. So we do hope that will come along. Representative Peterson?
And I'm submitting the bill again this year.
So Representative Peterson will have the bill again this year. Any other questions? I have a question for you, Mr. Benson. I'm sort of doing a little bit of thinking out loud here in committee, which is dangerous. But here's what I'm thinking. As you said, your funding goes through the next biennium, right, for these projects? So it will go through. So we're, in essence, putting our budget together for, 2009, 2010, right? Mm-hmm. And your funding on these ends in 2011. Is that correct?
Yes, our last day will be the last day of 2011, technically. Our report would be ready, but assuming that you're not in yet another special session even until then, it would be ready for the 2012 legislative session.
Because those members, I just think that's something for us to think about with such a lack of money here, that you are the great experiment and you're out there testing these things. And if you're going to go citywide in Minneapolis, do you think you will expand anywhere beyond that during Mel's lifetime, so to speak?
Probably not, or more, almost certainly not. I will be very candid with you that this economy has challenged fundraising, both foundation-wise, be it corporate or private, and corporate money. It's a much bigger challenge than it was certainly the early on. So to expand is probably something that we won't be doing. The reason we expanded into Minneapolis is one of our partners stepped forward and said we would like to do this for the entire city of Minneapolis. And so that was one of the opportunities we had. And when I say that, it's parent aware. It's not everything. It's just parent aware.
But, well, thank you. I think it's just food for thought for us that this is happening, and that at least there is your funding is probably better than our funding right now. So with that, any other questions, Mr.? Representative Bly?
I came in a little bit late. I apologize for that. I noticed on one of the reports that talks about 58% of the allowances funds have been dispersed, and then talks about they're only dispersed when children enroll. I'm wondering, is there a reason that is that a lag, or?
Representative Bly, we are going, you're ahead of us.
Oh, I'm
this.
Excuse me.
I would like you to ask that question in just a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So we're right now on scholarships and for allowances, which
yeah.
I think we're going to hear about next.
Yeah.
We'll hold that for the next testifier. Yeah. Representative Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Benson, just on the expansion question that was brought up, if a corporation or I heard you say that you went into Minneapolis because there was a corporate donor or some private donor that wanted to participate and bring it to the city of Minneapolis. Would that be available to other areas in the state? Would you look at that? Would you consider that? I'm wondering.
Mr. Benson.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Ward, our original intent, we need to stay close to our focus, is we are a pilot. We are testing pilots. I think it diffuses what our focus is if we start expanding it too much and don't follow in really effectively with the evaluation. We want to be able to turn to policymakers, private funders, and say, here is the absolutely best way. So that, I think, coupled with the unlikelihood of a donor or someone that would step up and say, we want to take this wider, is probably suggests that we will stay close to where we're at.
Thank you. I think we're going to have to move on, Mr. Dunson, but ideally, since you're a football player, to use a sports analogy, when you run the track relays and you hand off the baton, ideally that was going to be what we were going to do, that Mel would hand us the baton and we would pick it up. But, then the economy collapsed. So I think it's going to be a little more difficult of a handoff.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, what a great idea is we have a think tank that works through the issues, gets the best evaluation, tells us what the best research is, mm-hmm. and then we could do it at the state level. But there would need to be seen. Hopefully we could be able to do that. So thank you. Thank you for being
thank
here
you.
Today. And welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Deb Swenson-Clatt with the Minnesota Department of Human Services, the Child Development Services Unit. I'm happy to be here today to provide you with some information about two initiatives that DHS is involved in, the Parent Aware Rating System and the Pre-K Exploratory Program, also called Pre-K Allowances. Before I go on with my remarks, maybe I can just add one clarification to something Dwayne Benson said about the timing for funding. Parent Aware is funded by the MELF with a contribution from DHS through June of 2010. So it does not extend through the end of fiscal year 11. And I just wanted to make sure to clarify that.
That's a very good point.
All right. All of these programs, Parent Aware rating system, the pre-K allowance program, along with MELF's St. Paul Scholarship Program, and the School Readiness Connections Program that Sharika Tilmick from DHS described to you last Thursday, make up a package of system reform efforts being piloted in Minnesota to more strategically focus our resources and investments on improving outcomes for young children, particularly those at risk. And as Assistant Commissioner Johnson noted in our overview of DHS child care programs last week, improving outcomes for at-risk children is an agency priority, and our engagement in these initiatives is an important strategy for us in addressing this goal. It is our intent in being involved in them to provide leadership and effective implementation for each of these efforts, so that we can contribute to this very important set of policy discussions about how to tap the promise of high-quality early childhood in order to improve the lives of young children. We've had in Parent Aware so far and in the pre-K allowance program, I think, many successes, but there's also been some bumps along the way, as is not unexpected in two very ambitious pilot programs. That it's really been made much easier by the deep commitment and the hard work of many, many partners, and it's been a privilege for us at DHS to work with them all, so we really appreciate the opportunity to be engaged. Today, I'll just provide a little bit more information on Parent Aware, building on Dwayne's overview, and then a description of the allowance program. I'll try to move as quickly as I can and stay within the time allotted. I'm hoping in providing the description of the allowances to set the stage a little bit for three representatives of our grantee organizations who are also on the agenda. So looking at Parent Aware again, and stepping back from Dwayne's description of it in Minnesota, I want to first offer a definition of quality rating system that's provided by the Child Care Bureau at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Our rating system is a systematic approach to assess, improve, and communicate the level of quality in early learning and care settings. Quality rating systems can be used to align components of early childhood systems and increase accountability in improving quality. Rating systems across the country typically have five components. They include quality standards, a process for rating and monitoring program quality, support for quality improvement, financial incentives sometimes for programs to participate, and dissemination of rating information to parents. Nationally, there is a quality rating system movement afoot across the country. 14 states have implemented statewide rating systems. 9 states, including Minnesota, have a pilot. 20 states are in the exploration or planning phase, with just 6 states not involved in rating systems. The Minnesota pilot, Parent Aware, is described in an overview one-pager that's in front of you. It's called What is Minnesota's Parent Aware Rating Tool? And there's a couple of brochures for you, one for parents and one for programs. They're this purple and yellow color. So I encourage you to look at that information. The ratings themselves are available through a website, parentawareratings.org, and I also encourage you to visit that website and familiarize yourself with it and the rating search process and the materials that are posted for parents and providers. We've tried to be as transparent as possible about the information so that providers and parents feel comfortable using the system. The Parent Aware indicators are really the heart of the rating system. These are the program standards that are the core of any rating system, and you should also have a set of 3 handouts in front of you that are all titled Parent Aware Rating Tool Indicators of Quality, and one of those is for child care centers, another is for family child care providers, and a third describes the provisional rating for both of those types of programs. The indicators are based on best practice and what research tells us are the characteristics of high-quality programs that help children become ready for school. and they were selected with input from early childhood professionals, from researchers, in consultation with the Department of Education, and they are intended to be aligned with our state's early childhood indicators of progress, which are the standards or guidelines for what we have said children should be able to know and do by the time they reach kindergarten. Finally, the indicators were approved by the MELF, and they are designed in four levels. So a program comes in to the Parent Aware program and can receive a star rating of 1, 2, 3, or 4. There is also a provisional rating option. The ratings are calculated using a points system, and points are totaled across the four dimensions of quality. Again, as Dwayne said, family partnerships, teaching materials and strategies, tracking learning, and teacher training and education. Two terms that we talk about a lot in trying to measure quality are structural quality and process quality. These are kind of researchy terms in our field, but they're important for understanding why we've selected the rating indicators that we have in Parent Aware. Structural quality measures things like child-adult ratio, teacher training and education, the facilities that early care services are being offered in, group size in a center-based setting. And these are all really important for understanding and ensuring that quality can happen. But another type of quality that also we're attempting to measure in Parent Aware is called process quality, the kind of quality characteristics that really encompass what happens between adults who are caring for children and the children in care. And what we know is important to see in high-quality early childhood settings is really warm and stimulating interaction between these adults and children. This is hard to capture in any kind of rating tool or measurement or study of measurement, but we're trying to do this in Minnesota in the rating system using both documentation that providers submit and on-site observations using tools that have been used across the country in studies and are validated. Those two tools that you might hear about are called the Environmental Rating System and the CLASS. The CLASS tool is probably better than the Environmental Rating System gets at that those process quality measures that are so important. So in addition to the Parent Aware ratings themselves, the Parent Aware includes disseminating this information to parents and then also quality improvement supports to providers, because we're wanting to help them move up the ladder of the rating system and be as successful as possible in it. Each fully rated program that receives a 1, 2, or 3 star is eligible for a payment of or reimbursement for individualized classroom materials and equipment, training and coaching to achieve their goals in an improvement plan that's designed to move them forward. There's also free training that we've made available on curriculum and assessments and materials that we're feeding to programs who are, again, trying to move up the ladder. And we've also packaged several other supports together for programs, one around accreditation facilitation. If a program chooses to take a path of accreditation to get to a higher level, another set of supports that we're providing is business supports to providers who want to ensure that their fiscal situation is on track as they embark on this fairly rigorous quality improvement process. That's that my overview of Parent Aware, and if there's no questions, I'll move on to the allowances.
I think with at least one of the pending questions is on allowances.
Mm-hmm.
So any Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, this might be more for you, Mr. Benson. I'm curious, at the end of the expiration of MELF's role, you mentioned a report, and I'm curious if there's a termination to your role, is there, as part of your report, are you contemplating an implementation plan that talks about how to scale and and a recommendation for that, or will we just receive kind of the data and your opinions on the rating system itself?
Our Madam Chair and Representative, our board is very adept at shifting, and we've moved from, we can think about this almost in 6 years. The first 2 years was like a startup business. The second 2 years, which we're kind of in now, is implementation. And then the last 2 years is kind of the wrap-up, if you will. Those breaks aren't exact. But our focus will be now on marketing. Marketing, particularly parent-aware, that we want to become part of the nomenclature of people when they consider early childhood, be it at-risk kids or not. We at our last meeting yet in January, we appropriated, or the board gave us the direction of spending a considerable amount of money on marketing. So we think that we can get a lot of this into play. You raised a good question. Our intent is not to hand you a report. We want to have some meat behind it, some people that are using the system, so that it becomes something that needs to be implemented. But yes, I will go away at that point. Which you might want to speed this up a
little. You have a follow-up?
Well, just maybe a comment, perhaps, and that would be to maybe engage us fairly early as that sunset is coming, and we could participate in asking for certain things as part of that final deliverable, which might include some kind of a roadmap for how to take it to scale and how to implement it. I think that'd be very beneficial for us to know how to actually perpetuate it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, thank you for that offer, and we will take you up on that. As we get closer, we intend to interact with as many of you as possible, and we also have our intention is to have on the ground a number of things that are working that will make the transition for you, we hope, fairly easy.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, I like the quality rating, and I'm not so sure the scholarships and allowances are worth the trouble, but I really like the quality rating, and I'm wondering if they have gotten any more sophisticated since the last time, maybe Ms. Swenson Clad, or are we still giving all Head Starts a 4 and all school programs a 3, because as some people know, I'm interested in the quality rating being more sophisticated so parents could know, is this a good Head Start compared to that one, or is this school program, how does it stack up? To me, the quality range would mean so much more if we were more sophisticated with them and they evaluated things differently instead of assuming all Head Starts are the same or all schools are the same. Any progress on that?
Ms. Swenson Clad.
Representative Greiling, members of the committee, currently in the pilot, Head Start programs still are receiving a 4-star rating along with accredited child care programs. They're automatically also given a 4-star rating, and pre-K programs are receiving a 3-star rating. I know that there's been lots of discussion across those different program types and with the Department of Education and with MEL about those ratings. My understanding is that at this point that will remain for the life of the pilot.
At this point, yes. But there will be the possibility for you to change that, make it more outcome-driven, whatever it is. But the model will be in place.
Why don't we, Ms. Swenson Clad, and talk about allowances more, and then we have a question on that as well.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, moving on to the allowances, I again here want to issue a thanks to our organizations that we're partnering with on the allowances, in particular the allowance grantees who, again, who are also on the agenda today. They have worked from our perspective tirelessly on this initiative, including months prior to the start of implementation of their contracts, and I know have forged deep relationships with programs in their communities, and have been very patient with us at the department, and have done everything in their power to reach out to eligible families. So I just want to put that thanks out to them. As quickly as possible, again, provide an overview of the allowance program. I'll begin by drawing your attention to another one-page overview in your packet on the pre-K allowance program. I understand there's also a copy of the statute available for you. The pre-K exploratory project legislation was passed in 2007, establishing the allowance program. It, in essence, provides $4,000 per year per child for families at or below 185% of poverty to pay for school readiness services for their preschool-aged children. It's similar in many ways to the MELF St. Paul Scholarship Program in that it's intended to be a market-based approach designed to give parents some resources to bring to a high-quality early childhood program of their choice. It does differ from the scholarship program in that the amount available per child is smaller. In the scholarship program, I believe children are eligible for up to $13,000 per year, whereas, again, the allowances are capped at $4,000 per child per year. The allowances are made available in more geographic areas than the two St. Paul neighborhoods that the scholarships are provided in. The allowance program also doesn't include the same level of parent mentoring and support available in the scholarship program. All that said, we believe that these two programs are some of the first in the country of their type, with the possible exception of a program in Denver. And so it has been both very interesting but very challenging to roll out a brand new program. Our partners include you, the legislature that's provided the funding for this initiative. DHS and MDE are tasked with implementation. The grantees include Hennepin County, the City of St. Paul, and Blue Earth County, which is distributing administering the allowance program in both Blue Earth and Nicollet counties. The evaluator is SRI International, as Duane mentioned, the same evaluator as for the scholarship program. And it's, I think, helpful for all of us to see that same evaluation firm engaged in these different but similar projects. The way the allowance program works from a family's perspective is that a family applies for the allowance and is found eligible if they meet the eligibility criteria. They are then directed to select an early childhood program of their choice that is a high-quality program. The family and program then complete a family agreement form in order to establish how the program should use the allowance funds. And this is our mechanism for ensuring that the family has some control over or some say in how the funds are used. The eligible uses as dictated in statute include covering the cost of the service if a parent is charged a fee. It also can be used to create a new space for a new child that is not receiving an allowance. It can be used to increase the duration of the program, the hours per week or the hours per day that's offered in that program. And finally, it can be used to improve quality. It can be used to purchase materials, access training, all in order to improve or maintain the quality of services. A final step is that the grantees at the local level verify the programs that the program is eligible, is approved for serving children through the allowance program, and it sets up a payment schedule with the program and flows the funds directly to the program. The funds don't go to directly to the parents. To be eligible, families must live in the pilot areas. They are the same areas as the Parent Aware pilot, North Minneapolis, the White Otter School District, St. Paul, and Blue Earth and Nicollet counties. Children must, and families must meet the eligibility criteria. They're described on that one-pager. And then they must select an approved program, which means a program that has a 3 or 4 star rating in Parent Aware or is provisionally rated or approved through Department of Human Services or Department of Education.
We're going to need you to wrap up.
I will, okay. I'll just point out that there's an evaluation summary, an interim evaluation report also included in your packet, and it describes some very early findings on the program, including some demographic information about children and the allowances awarded. It includes that figure that Representative Bly mentioned about 58% of the funds being dispersed, and I will say that that data is from last fall, and things are changing very rapidly day to day in the allowance program due to the hard work of the grantees and early childhood programs. So at this, as of December 19th, our most recent data, 88% of funds are dispersed to families, and I know that as we speak, funds are continuing to roll out the door. I will stop there, and I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Today, because we have testifiers from out of town, we're going to need to move forward. Members, this is not the last time we'll have QRS. A week from today, at our hearing, Lee Stoney, who is the National Finance Expert, will be in our committee. We will have Representative Pearson's bill on QRS. Next Thursday, we will have my bill on QRS next Thursday. So you will get a chance to discuss this in more detail. Representative Bly, anything else?
Well, perhaps you've explained it in your comment. I just was curious to know what was causing that that slower dispersal of the, if you have any more to say about that.
Clinton Clark.
Representative Bly, members of the committee, I think there have been a number of challenges along the way, and we are learning a lot from the rollout of this program. I think on the family side, allowances are sometimes slower to be dispersed because families are encountering a brand new program for which there's a new application, and are facing some challenges, to be honest, in completing that process. We've tried to create an application that's very straightforward, but I think from the for some families, that's been a challenge, and so there's a slower uptake on their part. On the I think disbursement of the allowance funds has also just been slower, not just in terms of allowances awarded to families, but then in the selection of programs by families and the actual rollout of funds to those programs.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm interested in any of the specifics about, were there language difficulties, or did you have things in kind of multiple language? Was that one of the issues that made it more difficult for families to get involved, or if you could just say more about that?
I think what we'll do, I think the programs are going to talk a little bit about this.
All right.
Because we've had numerous meetings about this.
Right.
We're going to talk about it, but because of time, I think we'll move ahead, and if we don't get it answered today, we'll bring somebody in next week, but there are numerous issues.
Okay.
And I do want you to know what they are.
Okay.
So you'll be hearing about that. So if we can move to the next group, thank you. Cheryl Miller, Lisa Caribou, and John Woodwick. When you set up a pass legislation at the legislature here and you don't have it set up, the implementation can often be, it was a lot more daunting, I think, than any of us thought there would be, but you will hear about some of the issues.
Great.
Yeah. Why don't we start with Carol, if she is ready, and then we'll have Lisa and then John, or whatever order you'd like to go in.
Yeah.
I think Carol, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carol Miller. I am from Hennepin County. Just so you're clear, there are, as has been mentioned previously, three pre-K allowance grantees, and we have some different lessons and some similar lessons learned from each. So what we thought we would do is each of us talk first about our individual experiences, and then take questions together, because many of our experiences also are alike. So if that's acceptable. For my part, I had the lead in Hennepin County for the planning process for pre-K allowances, and I've also continued to support our implementation staff. We have two MEL scalable community pilots in our county, which you heard Mr. Benson mention, and the staff are passing out information on those that you can look at later. We just thought you might like to see it. One is Caring for Kids Initiative in the western suburbs, and the other is 500 Under 5 in an initiative in two neighborhoods in North Minneapolis. Regarding the pre-K allowances, Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health Department is the actual pre-K allowance grantee in Hennepin County. Our grant includes pilots in two distinct geographic areas, as you've heard. One is the boundaries of the Wayzata School District in our western suburbs, and the other is 13 neighborhoods in North Minneapolis. And I want to clarify, these two pre-K allowance areas do overlap the MELF pilot areas, but they're not the same geographically. One reason that Hennepin County is a grantee for our area is that there was a desire to see how it would work to build this pilot on an existing county child care system infrastructure as one way to test out how something like this would look. For instance, we've been using the same computer system that we use for our child care assistance program, a system that already is familiar to almost all of the early care and education providers in our community, so they didn't have to learn a new system. The authorization of the allowance to the provider comes out looking rather similar to what they're familiar with. We also are using the same payment system that we use for shelter assistance. So again, it's a familiarity piece that we thought would be interesting to at least try it that way and see how it worked. I would say all in all, in Hennepin County, in our two pilot areas, many families have benefited. Some have been able to access quality programs that would not have been able to do so had they not had the use of the allowances to pay part of the cost. Some have benefited from the new slots that have been created, and our director of our school district program in Minneapolis and Wayzata will be here to talk about that. They've actually added slots using the program. And some have benefited because their providers have been able to take advantage of the quality upgrades and training and so on that were mentioned. We've also faced a number of challenges in implementation. A couple have been alluded to. Some challenges vary between the two pilot areas. For instance, in our suburban area, they already had quite a number of accredited providers, so the transition from accredited to a quality-rated four-star program was something that was pretty quick to do. While in North Minneapolis, we had fewer accredited programs ready to go, and in fact, due to the economics of the last few years, we actually have lost some in North Minneapolis. So it's a building back process. We had to put quite a bit of time into supporting the startup of Parent Aware in North Minneapolis because of that, which we were more than willing to do, and we have had many very interested providers. Both areas were impacted by the time delays that have been mentioned, both the delays as the state worked through the startup process, and certainly also for us as a grantee, some delay in just getting it all set up and training staff and rolling it all out and so on. For our staff, due to their experience with public assistance, our staff were really skilled in reviewing and authorizing parent applications. That was something they were familiar with and didn't find it all that challenging. However, they did need to learn things like how to review the provider plans that Ms. Flinton-Klatt mentioned and how to work through the connection with Parent Aware and things like that. Took us a little while. We also had to address service and outreach in multiple languages, which was mentioned earlier, that the Minneapolis School District, for instance, has, I don't know, something more than 80 languages spoken, and certainly Wayzata has more than just English as well. So those were also challenges. We had some confusion, both on the part of parents and providers, around the application process, and I know John is going to speak to that. And we also had challenges in that actually rather uniquely, our North Minneapolis pilot is right in the same area. If you look on the foreclosure maps and that are, that have been published in the paper, there's almost a direct overlay. And so for some of our families who get, who were getting started in the process and they lost their housing because they were renters who, where the landlord was foreclosed, or they were lower income homeowners. Finally, I just want to say that we have greatly appreciated this opportunity. I think we've learned many lessons, and others have said that already, that can help us inform our future work, and we do want to thank you for your interest and support.
Okay. Thank you. Let's hear from all the professors, and we'll take questions. Who wants to go next?
Okay. Madam Chair, Representatives, my name is Lisa Caravo. I am the Early Education Project Coordinator with Mayor Coleman's office in the city of St. Paul. I'm going to talk very similarly to what Carol Miller just spoke about with how things are organized in the city of St. Paul. It's a slightly different setup in that we are a citywide, the families are eligible citywide versus in a smaller area of in Hennepin County. And we also have coordination of the scholarship program, and we have the Parent Aware citywide as well. So that, and I won't spend too much time talking about the scholarship program right now just because we're focusing on the allowances, but I did want to bring your attention to, I provided a just a brief overview of the program if you're interested in reading about that. There's also a form that talks about sort of the differences between the allowances program and the scholarship program if there are specific questions on what that looks like in St. Paul. And we also have some brochures for both of the programs just to clarify for you some of those issues. But the so we were charged to oversee the coordination of both the scholarship program through the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation and the allowances. The way that it is coordinated with the City of St. Paul is we have a subcontract with Resources for Child Caring. They are also coordinating the administration for the scholarship project. So we have been able to utilize that structure, and that's definitely been something that has been a great benefit to us because we've had an organization that was kind of already set and ready to go and start to process things already, and so we have that benefit. Just some of the things we've done for outreach is we've connected with a variety of community organizations, sent information to families on the basic sliding fee waiting list, connected with public health, WIC clinics. The programs themselves have done a lot of marketing to try and encourage families to get involved in the program and then to use it in their program as well. Faith-based communities, a number of different things to reaching out to different families. Some of the challenges are very, I think, similar across all of the different areas. Being a pilot, we are learning as we go from day one. We're still learning, which we should be. Part of the challenges that we're learning about families is just it takes time to choose a program. These models are set up to be parent choice and that families have that option that they can navigate and choose, and so that does take some time to have them figure that out and learning about important things like transportation or lack thereof, just for all different kinds of programs and things like that that are really important to learn. We also have a really diverse, a very diverse population, which we need to learn how to reach out to all of those families. One of the great benefits of that is that we are working alongside Parent Aware, and more providers have gotten involved because of these programs wanting to access these resources, more diverse providers, more family child care providers have gotten involved as well in Parent Aware to try and be a part of these pilots. So that's been a very good thing for our area. A couple of other benefits we just had, we also have had programs that expand their slots or increase time from a half day to a full day for families who otherwise wouldn't be able to have that option, and programs themselves are able to use funds not only to help cover parent fees but for things like curriculum and things that can help them increase their rating on the Parent Aware rating scale to help them get to a higher quality. So that is just an overview of how things are in St. Paul. And again, I also want to thank you for your commitment to this work and for involving the city.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We know you traveled the farthest, right?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having me here today. I provided sort of a one-page overview of the Blue Earth Nicola that's on a yellow sheet of paper. And I wanted to just let you know some of the differences, since we are the only non-metro part of this pilot. There are some differences. When I put down the statistics for Blue Earth, for Nicola, and for in comparison Minnesota, so you get the idea that, like, average yearly license center, the cost of that is much closer in Blue Earth and Nicola to $4,000 that's allowable under the free K allowance program than it is in the state of Minnesota. It's more close to $10,000. So it makes a difference in our pilot area, I believe. I always think that smaller, in my mind, is better because it makes things less complicated. And the degree of difficulty is minimized. So you can see that there's only in our area there's 21 eligible child care centers. And 33% of them are participating, yet 62% more want to participate. So they're in process. There are 220 family daycare centers in that pilot area, but only 1.8% of them have an interest in participating so far. There are 5 school districts, and 80% of them will be involved at the end of this. There is 1 Head Start, and the Head Start participates in it. We have used all of our pre-K allowance funds, gotten them out to families. We have 105 additional families that are interested in this program. We are going to be getting enough money from graciously from Hennepin to serve about 20 more families, but otherwise it will be fully utilized within the Blue Earth Nicholas area. There are some benefits that we saw from this program, that there's been overwhelmingly amount of support from the child care center. They're very interested in it. In this current economy, the allowances have added stability to child care centers whose families may have gone through a job loss. So one of the things that this allowance has been able to be provided to allow those families to continue to have their child there, and they're looking for work. And the child care centers are benefiting because their bottom line continues to be they need the money to cover their staffing and their facilities. So that's been a very good thing in these times of our economy. Head Start ran a full summer program that was 40 hours. It was for 9 weeks. They've not been not provided that in the past. There are 45 families that got to participate in that. Just a cute story. They went to a pool. There was a kid that had never been to a pool before, and he wondered if there were sharks in the pool. So, I mean, they were finding out things like that. There are two school districts that also created a summer program. Not at the same duration, but they also provided that. Child care centers, the facilities that have participated in the pre-K allowance program, have made significant improvements in their curriculum and in their environment. And the improvements not only impact the families that receive the pre-K allowance, but all the other families that are going there that are not pre-K allowance families. So it benefits multiple families, their children. And the other thing is that the pre-K allowance provides programs and incentives to participate in parent aware. Those child care facilities evaluate their current operations and make improvements in their programs, creating the best environments for school readiness for all children attending that facility. One of the challenges I think we've talked about, you've heard some, and I wanted to address specifically, and it's on the opposite side of that handout that I provided, and it's just three circles. And this is a parent-driven program, and we understand that, and I certainly endorse that. But one of the challenges that it has created is that a parent can talk with the administrator of the pre-K allowance. They can also talk with the provider of the child care. But the child care and the provider can't talk to each other unless there is a participation agreement. And because of this is a new process, families don't always understand the necessity of having that signed participation agreement. It causes delays and problems with those families actually getting into a spot that they really want to get into. So it's, I think we've all had that, faced that challenge that communication isn't allowed where we think if it just was, it would make things work smoother. Thank you.
I suppose in statute numbers we could think about putting something in and, or changing our legislation to amend that. Are there questions? We have the next three, just so you know you're on for 10 minutes only, and the last one's on for 10, so we're right at about time, but we could take a question, anything? Okay. I want to thank you for coming. We do want to hear more about the problems, and I think, members, one, we've had some parents ask to testify, so it's just deciding when to bring them in on both sides, the issues and so forth. So it's clear we kind of need to delve into those, and when you do something new, there's going to be a lot of issues, but it's helpful for us to hear them, and hopefully we can help you solve some of those. So thank you, and thank you for traveling here today.
Thanks.
We'll have Maureen Seiwert, Jackson Felt, and Marcia Trino. See who would like to start. Maureen, do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay, welcome
sure.
to the committee.
I'm Maureen Seiwert, Executive Director of Early Childhood Education for the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I will probably be a little bit more of the voices of practicality. We're the implementers here down really at the ground level of how allowances are going from a school-based perspective. First of all, our districts are support parent choice of high-quality early childhood programs that prepare kids for kindergarten in a variety of settings, including childcare, Head Start, and schools. Through these pilots, we have been able to service more children, extend the day for some, and improve the quality. We are extremely grateful for that opportunity. The little children in our community are even more grateful for that opportunity. So we want to be a part of this, and we want to make it work. MDE established the program eligibility criteria, including curriculum, instruction, learning environments, assessment, teacher qualifications, duration, and family partnerships. School-based programs follow these criteria established by MDE. Since this is a pilot program, we appreciate the opportunity to make recommendations on how to improve the program for families who choose school-based programs. The following challenges relate to the mechanics of program implementation for families and school districts based on the school-based model of offering early childhood programming. First, and this is just you commented about it already, but we just need to say for the record that programs must have three or four sets to receive children with allowances. There are currently three different sets of criteria for rating child care, Head Start, and public schools. The equivalence of the criteria between the three types of early childhood programs is unclear, and there's been some confusion as to how schools are rated three or four stars. Schools have agreed to be part of parent aware evaluation really to help kind of clarify that and to really look at all of us kind of from the same level. So we really are interested in having standardized across early childhood settings so that there isn't one criteria for one group and one for another. Secondly, the administration of these pilots has been burdensome for programs and families. We've had to add extra staff, outreach to families, helping families complete applications, securing signed agreements, creating a different databases, communicating with grantees, et cetera. We are required by law to have our school districts, our budgets in place in June prior to the next school year. So that this allows us to plan for the number of classrooms, transportation, staff, actually our teachers' contracts. We have to lay people off by a certain time in the school year. And so we have found it very difficult to project and plan for programming, not knowing exactly what we will be able to count on. As an example, in Minneapolis, the school board actually, or the one department, loaned my department the money to extend the day for 80 children, to add, we had an early reading first grant, and we wanted to keep that full day, and they loaned it under the promise that I would secure enough allowances to pay that pot of money back. So we're still working on that, and that's challenging in terms of planning. Districts can only bill for funds once families are granted an award, and programs have a signed family agreement form. We don't have daily contact with our families because children come in on buses. We also have found the language barriers for families difficult. And so we have mobility of children. We don't know for the whole year how long children will be in our program. So we won't really know until June 30th how successful we have been at securing the allowances to pay for our programs. We do understand that it's different for Minneapolis and St. Paul, as an example. We register centrally. We register through our student placement process. We serve 700 and 1,300 children, respectively, in our programs. So I know that Marcia's experience in Wayzata has been different from the school district perspective. So she's going to talk a little bit right now about how different that has been for her. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Yes, Wayzata does have poverty and is in need of scholarships and pre-K allowances. And I want to first just say thank you that the pre-K allowances
in our... introduce yourself for the record.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My name is Marcia Trino, and I coordinate early childhood programs for Wayzata Public Schools. Thank you. I want to say thank you first for the pre-K allowances, because we have not been able in the suburban schools to serve the needs that we have, and we do not do anything currently or prior to the pre-K allowances to even go out and find families, because we simply did not have funds to serve them in a part-time school readiness program. So this pre-K allowance has allowed us to serve almost two times as many children in part-time pre-K programs through school readiness. A couple of things that I think are good to know from our perspective is that it has taken a lot of time and personnel on the school district or the school readiness part to help parents understand how to go about doing the pre-K allowance and learn about parent aware. And it's been a lot of hands-on, and that took personnel, that took administrative time for us to do that. And I think that we have to keep that in mind when we move forward. And also that school-based programs, as Maureen mentioned, we have to get budgets done. We have to know how much to get budgets done. We have to know how many people we're planning for, how many staff that are going to be there. And without knowing if everything was on a pre-K allowance, it would be very difficult for us to do that type of programming that we've done so well. And then I just want to say there are many, many families that only need part-time programming and want their children to be a part of that. And I think the schools have offered, along with many high-quality accredited and high-quality licensed preschools, been able to offer that to families. And I really respect that piece, that parents have that choice that they can make. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And we are just at our last testifier, and we have to... It's pretty short here, but we will be visiting this topic. Ms. Felt, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jacqueline Feld, and I'm the pre-kindergarten program supervisor for St. Paul Public Schools. And thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today on pre-K allowances. The St. Paul Public Schools pre-kindergarten program greatly appreciates serving families who selected our program for, with which to use their allowance awards. I'm going to continue on with several challenges of program implementation. As you've already heard and been referenced, the application is difficult for families and put the barrier to participation. And an example for us in St. Paul Public Schools is there were, we didn't know the status of 118 applications that we knew had been submitted from St. Paul Public School families. So we confirmed with resources for child caring what the status of those applications were, and 51 of the applications were not complete. So and families didn't provide the missing documentation when Resources for Child Care sent them a letter and tried to make attempted to make a phone call. They found that many of the families their phone numbers were disconnected, demonstrating the mobility of families and the difficulty in communicating with families. Also, families who receive the awards, they may not understand exactly what they're applied for, so it takes some time to educate the families and help them select the site. And in larger districts like ours, application to the pre-kindergarten program is done through a K-12 student placement process. So this makes it difficult for us to know in the administrative level of the pre-K program if families have applied or been awarded an allowance, and we have a limited direct contact with families. So in St. Paul, as of January 5th, 2009, over one-third of the children, the 149 children that with allowance awards have not been placed in programs to this point, or to that point as of January 5th. And thus they're not using their funds, and well, there's some children that are on the waiting list, so this is a concern of ours. And we, those with allowance awards will need to make a choice and sign a family agreement by February 2nd in order to receive their funding. And St. Paul Public Schools assisted approximately 168 families in completing the allowance applications. And currently we're anticipating funding from 59 allowances, and this was less than we had anticipated last spring when we were doing some of our planning. And as of December 5th, there are 325 children on the waiting list for St. Paul Public Schools pre-kindergarten program who are low-income and English language learners. And this relates, it's difficult to add programming for these children because of the timing and predictability of funding through the allowances. Mm-hmm. I'd like to comment on a few recommendations for streamlining the administration of allowances for school-based programs. And you have a list, but I just would like to highlight that these are related, again, to the timing and predictability of funding. And one would be to consider earmarking a third of the funds for each type of program, the child care, Head Start, and preschool-based programs, and then money could be shifted between programs and be flexible based on the demands that is determined. And then the legislature could evaluate the demand for each kind of program and adjust funds in the future. Another recommendation would be to set in statute eligibility criteria for family participation in each type of program, and for school-based programs, considering the free and reduced lunch income status, English language learners, and children who demonstrate need on early childhood screening could be criteria for school-based families to participate. And then another recommendation would be schools would document to MDE by December 1st the number of eligible children for awards based on these criteria I just mentioned. And this would make the pre-K program similar to other K-12 school based programs. And then by spring, MDE could notify districts of the allowance funds available for upcoming year based on the eligibility numbers that were reported to MDE.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
Sure. So the districts could budget for classrooms and teachers, and for schools to increase programming, they'd need to know in advance their stable funding. And then we could report back to MDE the number of children that have been served by allowances. So we just wanted to thank you for this opportunity and your interest in allowances, and it's greatly appreciated, and we look forward to your continued support of our efforts to implement these programs.
Thank you, Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you'll have time to answer this or not. I do understand the timeline, but because I'm new to this committee, I would like to hear at some point, maybe in a nutshell today, I don't understand why we didn't just appropriate the money for school readiness, Head Start, and sliding fee child care, and forget about all these problems, or would they still be there? That's my big question.
Who'd like to answer that?
jump
in.
Let's see. Would the problems still be there? I don't think all the problems still need to be there. I think there's a lot of competent and capable people that have worked on this. I think it's trying to take a bunch of apples and oranges and bananas and make them all one. You know, I think we all support standards-based and high quality, and all children should be in the best possible places for them. But our systems are very different, and I think looking at standardizing the eligibility for allowances, as an example, so that there are really good child care centers out there, there are really good Head Starts, there are really good school-based programs, they all vary in quality, and it isn't the title that makes, I mean, it's not because you're a Head Start. I think applying the same standard across all so that because you're a Head Start, you wouldn't get a certain thing, or because this happened, I'm talking about the QRS, I guess, so. But the allowance piece, I think it's all hand in hand.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, that'll be my big question as we're evaluating these, and I like the quality rating. I think we need to make sure we fund these very, very important programs, but all these problems that I keep hearing, and then the quality rating, which is the part I like, doesn't seem to be there. Every Head Start, regardless of quality, gets a 4. Every school program, regardless of quality, gets a 3. I don't think the parents learn anything. You know, they could have known already that the Head Start has more components than a school program, but we didn't need to have all this rigmarole to find that out. But yet we haven't been funding these, you know, Representative Slavic should have a lot more money in this committee to fund these important programs. So I guess I feel like we're diving at the scholarships and allowance money, because at least it's money. But I haven't understood, other than that, why we don't just fund what we have and then do a lot more outreach, and the parents calling on them and trying to beat the bushes to get them into the programs and help them make choices based on real quality ratings, not just these mindless number for whatever the headline is, as was just said. So
yeah. Well, I know we're going to have to move ahead, so if we can have the next testifier come up, but our last as far as Representative Garland, I mean, you're posing good questions and numbers. We need your thoughtful input on this. I think the jury is out on allowances and has not been determined, and there certainly are a lot of recommendations here on different things that could happen. Well, welcome to the committee. Sorry we're short on time.
That's okay.
But hopefully if you can sort of condense your testimony.
As fast as possible.
Okay.
Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee, thank you very much for having me today. My name is Amy Sussman-Stillman, and I am the acting co-director of the Center for Early Education and Development. And our role in the MELF work at the Center for Early Education and Development, or SEED, is around the evaluation, specifically the evaluation component. And as you know, one of the goals of MELF is to be able to provide evidence about the programs that work and the conditions under which those programs work, as well as information about cost effectiveness. And so what I'm going to describe is just to bring some clarity to what we have been doing around the evaluation work. So specifically, our role is that we are under contract with the MELF to coordinate across the multiple evaluations and evaluators that are funded by the MELF, and also conduct some of the evaluations ourselves. And we have a handout that has some buttons on it, and I'd like to just walk through with you a little bit that to clarify who's doing what and what are the components of the evaluation, so that ultimately when you get these reports, you have a sense of why we did what we were doing.
if members, if you can speak for a minute or two, just so we can get through this, and I think that mm-hmm. this is the start of the conversation, so
mm-hmm.
please proceed. Thank you.
Sure. What we did first, to acknowledge that MAP is a complex endeavor. There are about 16 projects, MAP-related projects that all are having evaluations. And so part of our role is to bring some coherence and coordination to the evaluations. So the first thing that we did was we formed a research consortium, and that's what those four bubbles are that you see. So this is what clarifies who is evaluating which of the projects, and I think that's helpful to understand at the beginning. So while the research that we're in St. Paul is conducting the baseline study, and also is conducting the evaluations of three of the projects listed on the slide, and that's SOLA International, which you did mention today, is conducting the scholarship part and the allowance evaluation, and they're also part of the school readiness connections evaluation. That is not a well-funded project in and of itself, but working with the Department of Human Services, they've coordinated those evaluations. It's child trends, and the Minnesota office is conducting the parent-aware evaluation. And then we at CEDA are conducting evaluations of what is the group of projects funded called the Innovation Grants. These are, I would refer to these as kind of the smaller project-specific grants with the purpose of demonstrating best practices. And so you see on the list there what those projects specifically are. And the way we work together in our research consortium is we communicate regularly, we plan our shared evaluation pieces together, we are coordinating data collection, data analysis, data management, also cost-effective resources to the evaluation as well. Our shared evaluation pieces came from the fact that we also developed a common framework for the evaluation. Again, to make sure that we are representing to the evaluation what the MAP perspective is on school readiness. And so, around effectiveness, information access, and resources, and cost. So in the back of the handout, we'll start out by seeing the set of research questions that are guiding all of the MAP evaluations. These are general questions. Each project has their more specific questions, but there's a coherence to the evaluation, so that we'll also be able to look comparatively across projects and be able to look at different classes of projects together as well as looking at them individually. So we're interested in results for children and families, we're interested in results for the programs themselves, and we're interested in results for the communities. And we'll hear a little bit about some of the community projects today. The second piece that we did is we created what we're calling a shared measurement model. And what that means is that all of our evaluations are using a core set of measures that are common, so that we'll be able to have some comparability for our results across the different projects. And specifically for the child piece, we have developed a child assessment pattern that can be used for both the five. So there are different issues if you get really specific on how you can get information about babies and you can about preschoolers. And so we're looking at issues around language and literacy. I guess I should say it's a more holistic perspective on children's development, so not just looking at one or two aspects, but coming starting from the notion that school readiness really is it requires us to be thinking about the whole child and all aspects of the child's development. So we're gathering information about language and literacy, cognitive skills, social and emotional development, approaches to learning, as well as an overall development.
Okay, so
we're going to
ask you to wrap up.
Okay. We also do the parent interviews, surveys of the providers, directors, and home visitors, and of partnerships. That will help us understand a little bit more about program specific and scalability of the projects. We also working with John Greenwald around the cost study piece. And then the last piece I'd really like to emphasize is the shared database that we have created. So there needs to be a good common repository for all of this information. And that's one of the reasons I believe that MAP came to the university to be able to provide that. So we have developed a database for all the MAP projects. All the evaluators are working to and putting their data in this database, which also allows to be able to have a contemporary database that doesn't exist in Minnesota until this point. So you will be able to track children forward. Hopefully you'll be able to still connect them to do that. We're after the mild concept. But what we would like to be able to do, we will have a basis for information about children's early experiences, and then we'd hopefully be able to track children into at least third grade and on, and we'll be able to link early experiences and then their later school experiences.
Thank you. I know it's members, if you have questions, if you can follow up. I'll just say very briefly, I always remember when Barb Sikora was chair of this committee, and she said, well, there's no evaluations of ECFE or Head Start's got some, but all these programs are no evaluates. We do have the evaluation, but it takes time. We're not going to have it for a while. So I think that, members, we've actually got a good research-based program here, but we have to, it's not determined whether it's is working or not. So with that, we're going to have to adjourn.
Okay.
But we will...
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
That the committee is adjourned. Thank you.